Indians fought back not only with physical resistance, but also with the artifacts of white culture, books, words, newspapers. In 1968, members of the Mohawk Nation at Akwesasne, on the St. Lawrence River between the United States and Canada, began a remarkable newspaper, Akwesasne Notes, with news, editorials, poetry, all flaming with the spirit of defiance. Mixed in with all that was an irrepressible humor. Vine Deloria Jr. wrote, "Every now and then I am impressed with the thinking of the non-Indian. I was in Cleveland last year and got to talking with a non-Indian about American history. He said that he was really sorry about what had happened to Indians, but that there was a good reason for it. The continent had to be developed, and he felt that Indians had stood in the way and thus it had to be removed. After all," he remarked, "what did you do with the land when you had it?" I didn't understand him until later when I discovered that the Cuyahoga River, running through Cleveland, is inflammable. So many combustible pollutants are dumped into the river that the inhabitants have to take special precautions during the summer to avoid setting it on fire. After reviewing the argument of my non-Indian friend, I decided that he was probably correct. Whites had made better use of the land. How many Indians could have thought of creating an inflammable river? In 1969, November 9th, there took place a dramatic event which focused attention on Indian grievances as nothing else had. It burst through the invisibility of previous local Indian protests and declared to the entire world that the Indians still lived and would fight for their rights. On that day, before dawn, 78 Indians landed on Alcatraz Island in San Francisco Bay and occupied the island. Alcatraz was an abandoned federal prison, a hated and terrible place, nicknamed The Rock. In 1964, some young Indians had occupied it to establish an Indian university, but they were driven off and there was no publicity. This time it was different. The group was led by Richard Oakes, a Mohawk, who directed Indian studies at San Francisco State College, and Grace Thorpe, a Sac and Fox Indian, daughter of Jim Thorpe, the famous Indian college football star and Olympic runner, jumper, hurdler. More Indians landed, and by the end of November, nearly 600 of them, representing more than 50 tribes, were living on Alcatraz. They called themselves Indians of All Tribes and issued a proclamation, "We Hold the Rock." In it, they offered to buy Alcatraz in glass beads and red cloth, the price paid Indians for Manhattan Island over 300 years earlier. They said, "We feel that this so-called Alcatraz Island is more than suitable for an Indian reservation, as determined by the white man's own standards. By this, we mean that this place resembles most Indian reservations in that, 1, it is isolated from modern facilities and without adequate means of transportation. 2, it has no fresh running water. 3, it has inadequate sanitation facilities. 4, there are no oil or mineral rights. 5, there is no industry, and so unemployment is very great. 6, there are no health care facilities. 7, the soil is rocky and non-productive, and the land does not support game. 8, there are no educational facilities. 9, the population has always exceeded the land base. 10, the population has always been held as prisoners and dependent upon others." They announced they would make the island a center for Native American studies for ecology. "We will work to depollute the air and waters of the Bay Area, restore fish and animal life." In the months that followed, the government cut off telephones, electricity, and water to Alcatraz Island. Many of the Indians had to leave, but others insisted on staying. A year later, they were still there, and they sent out a message to our brothers and sisters of all races and tongues upon our Earth Mother. "We are still holding the island of Alcatraz in the true names of freedom, justice, and equality, because you, our brothers and sisters of this earth, have lent support to our just cause. We reach out our hands and hearts and send spirit messages to each and every one of you. We hold the rock. We have learned that violence breeds only more violence, and we therefore have carried on our occupation of Alcatraz in a peaceful manner, hoping that the government of these United States will also act accordingly. We are a proud people. We are Indians. We have observed and rejected much of what so-called civilization offers. We are Indians. We will preserve our tradition and ways of life by educating our own children. We are Indians. We will join hands in a unity never before put into practice. We are Indians. Our Earth Mother awaits our voices. We are Indians of all tribes. We hold the rock. 6 months later, federal forces invaded the island and physically removed the Indians living there. It had been thought that the Navajo Indians would not be heard from again. In the mid-1800s, United States troops under Kit Carson burned Navajo villages, destroyed their crops and orchards, forced them from their lands. But in the Black Mesa of New Mexico, they never surrendered. In the late 1960s, the Peabody Coal Company began strip mining on their land, a ruthless excavation of the topsoil. The company pointed to a contract signed with some Navajos. It was reminiscent of the treaties signed with some Indians in the past that took away all Indian land. 150 Navajos met in the spring of 1969 to declare that the strip mining would pollute the water and the air, destroy the grazing land for livestock, use up their scarce water resources. A young woman pointed to a public relations pamphlet put out by the Peabody Coal Company, showing fishing lakes, grassland, trees, and said, "We're not going to have anything like those you see in the pictures. What is the future going to be like for our children, our children's children?" An elderly Navajo woman, one of the organizers of the meeting, said, "Peabody's monsters are digging up the heart of our Mother Earth, our sacred mountain, and we also feel the pains. I have lived here for years, and I'm not about to move." The Hopi Indians were also affected by the Peabody operations. They wrote to President Nixon in protest. Today, the sacred lands where the Hopi live are being desecrated by men who seek coal and water from our soil that they may create more power for the white man's cities. The Great Spirit said not to allow this to happen. The Great Spirit said not to take from the earth, not to destroy living things. It is said by the Great Spirit that if a gourd of ashes is dropped upon the earth, that many men will die, and that the end of this way of life is near at hand. We interpret this as the dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. We do not want to see this happen to any place or any nation again, but instead, we should turn all this energy for peaceful uses, not for war. In the fall of 1970, a magazine called La Raza, one of the countless local publications coming out of the movements of those years to supply information ignored in the regular media, told about the Pitt River Indians of Northern California. 60 Pitt Indians occupied land they said belonged to them. They defied the Forest Services when ordered to leave. One of them, Darrell B. Wilson, later recalled, "As the flames danced orange, making the trees come to life, and the cold creeped out of the darkness to challenge the speaking fire, and our breath came in small clouds. We spoke." They asked the government by what treaty it claimed the land. It could point to none. They cited a federal statute, 25 USCA 194, that where there was a land dispute between Indian and white, the burden of proof falls on the white man. They had built a Quonset hut, and the marshals told them it was ugly and ruined the landscape. Wilson wrote later, "The whole world is rotting. The water is poisoned, the air polluted, the politics deformed, the land gutted, the forest pillaged, the shores ruined, the towns burned, the lives of the people destroyed." And the Federals spent the best part of October trying to tell us the Quonset hut was ugly. To us, it was beautiful. It was the beginning of our school, the meeting place, home for our homeless, a sanctuary for those needing rest, our church, our headquarters, our business office, our symbol of approaching freedom, and it still stands. It was also the center for the reviving of our stricken, diluted, and separated culture, our beginning. It was our sun rising on a clear spring day when the sky holds no clouds. It was a good and pure thing for the heart to look upon. That small place on earth, our place. But 150 marshals came with machine guns, shotguns, rifles, pistols, riot sticks, mace, dogs, chains, manacles. The old people were frightened. The young questioned bravery. The small children were like a deer that has been shot by the thunder stick. Hearts beat fast as though a race was just run in the heat of summer. The marshals began swinging their riot sticks and blood started flowing. Wilson grabbed one marshal's club, was thrown down, manacled, and while lying face down on the ground, was struck behind the head several times. A 66-year-old man was beaten into unconsciousness. A white reporter was arrested, his wife beaten. They were all thrown into trucks and taken away, charged with assaulting state and federal officers and cutting trees, but not with trespassing, which might have brought into question the ownership of the land. When the episode was all over, they were still defiant. Indians who had been in the Vietnam War made connections. At the Winter Soldier investigations in Detroit, where Vietnam veterans testified about their experiences, an Oklahoma Indian named Evan Haney told about his. The same massacres happened to the Indians 100 years ago. Germ warfare was used then. They put smallpox in the Indians' blankets. I got to know the Vietnamese people, and I learned they were just like us. What we are doing is destroying ourselves and the world. I have grown up with racism all my life. When I was a child watching cowboys and Indians on TV, I would root for the cavalry, not the Indians. It was that bad. I was that far toward my own destruction. Though 50% of the children at the country school I attended in Oklahoma were Indians, nothing in school, on television, or on the radio, taught anything about Indian culture. There were no books on Indian history, not even in the library. But I knew something was wrong. I started reading and learning my own culture. I saw the Indian people at their happiest when they went to Alcatraz or to Washington to defend their fishing rights. They at last felt like human beings.